John Boy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? John Boy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one, and thank you guys for listening.
What's going on? Welcome back to Talking Baseball. We have our first ever interview with an MLB owner. Let's do it. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Talking Baseball. My name is Jimmy. Sitting next to me is Jake. Trevor's coming to us from California, and producer BBD is behind the plate. We are in the Roosevelt Studios. That's R-S-V-L-T-S. And as I said, we have another interview for you guys. It's not a player. It's not an umpire. It's not an ex-player. It's not a baseball scientist. It's not a reporter.
Director.
It's not a director. It's not an A-list actor.
One of 30.
MLB owner. Owner of the Brewers. We just wrapped up the interview. We'll get it to you quick. But first, Trev, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I was, you know, we've had a lot of talks about owners and players throughout the whole negotiation thing. And one thing that we always said was like, look, individually, these guys are, every guy that I've run into is a good guy. And Mark Attanasio is no exception. From every interaction that we've had, has just been a solid guy. And I think the way that he runs the team, it kind of comes off that way. I know I asked, it was funny because we did this. And then yesterday I had someone from Milwaukee at my house. And I was like, hey, guess what? We're going to interview the Brewers owner. Like, what do you guys think about him in Milwaukee? And he's like, everybody loves the Brewers. Everybody loves the Attanasio. So it's cool to be able to dig in on that a little bit and kind of get like, hey, man, this is a guy that not a lot of people get to hear from. Like, what's your perspective on baseball and the game? And what do you think about it? And I think that he did a really good job of kind of showing how much he cares about baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. Jake?
He's great. It's just such a weird... Again, I said the one of 30 thing. Like, when you really take that into perspective, it's pretty wild. And it's good. He's a baseball guy. I mean, we had him talking about some of his players, some of his old trades. I think some, you know, his calls he made after he became the Brewers owner. That's really cool if you're a Brewers fan or if, I guess, if you're thinking about getting a team. But, no, that was awesome. You know, we're a little connected to the California Strong Foundation. We started off there, and then we just got into it and talked some baseball, some new stuff, growth of the game, players. So,
yeah.
It's cool. And if it's pizza in New York, I mean,
he went
everywhere.
He even asked us our thoughts on seventh inning and,
yeah, that was
and
cool.
Man on second. It was cool that he was asking us our opinion on things. If you're looking for a hard hitting podcast about the negotiations,
about COVID and negotiations.
It's not what this is. That's not what we wanted it to be. We've moved past it. I think the owners have moved past it. We're on to baseball. We're talking about how good things have been, and that's what this interview is. And without further ado, here you go.
All right, we are joined by a very special guest today. We are coming live from the Bronx, and we have a guy who was born in the Bronx, Brewers owner Mark Attanasio. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Yeah, Cullen Parkway South.
Wow, that's right in my mom's neighborhood. She grew up in Pelham Parkway. That's same time as you, I think, as well. We're right by the stadium, two blocks away, so Bronx living. We're new, though. We don't have the Bronx toughness that I'm sure you guys got and my mom has.
Yeah, it's a little different. I tell my sons that, and you know my son Mike, and a little different growing up in sunny California, and you know, thinking it's tough when you're out with the surfers trying to find a spot in a wave. This is what we fix in the Bronx.
The last time that we saw you and Mikey was in California, in sunny Malibu, at the California Strong charity, which is something I wanted to ask about because we got to see it once. Trev's been a couple times. The event is awesome. We saw you there, and you get to just enjoy it. Your son and some of your employees put this on and started this charity. Is that cool to see that happen underneath you, kind of underneath your umbrella, and see them take off and do fun stuff like that?
So, yeah, it's always fun to see the energy that I'll call young people have. Ryan, I don't know, Trevor, you call Ryan Braun a young guy anymore. Maybe not. I know Christian teases
him. Not in baseball years.
But and also, by the way, I think Christian and Ryan have contract commitments well over $300 million. I'm not sure, a classic employee.
Yeah.
I think of them as business partners. Yeah, no, it's very energizing to see young people come together and to pull something off like that, which is really hard to do from a standing. I think Christian had the idea right around Thanksgiving with the first set of fires we had out here. Say, hey, we should do something. And for that to, you know, within 2 months, be able to raise more than $2 million and then give it all out. So a lot of charities, the money gets trapped. Here, they've given the money out and in many cases directly. I know Mike and Trevor and Jared Goff flew up to Northern California to give money out there. It's really very special. And especially, you know, these days, I think we're all mindful with all the challenges we have in the country, the fact that California Strong is still strong. We've given out money for COVID-19 families suffering and so forth. Not only have a successful event, but now turn it into a successful enterprise. Very hard to do. Someone who started his own company is very hard to do.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, yeah, we hope to come back again next year because it was a blast. Now, we talk about baseball all day, every day, all we do is talk about baseball. And the conversation that we had today is that baseball's back and it feels pretty normal right now. Like, we have almost a full slate. There's still some hesitations with some teams and stuff, but the game, the quality, the product to me has been awesome. The competitiveness seems to be there. Players seem to be giving out their best effort and best product. And I think we're going to have some fun races. How relieving was it to have this finally happen after the pandemic and the off season? And it, just to put it simply, baseball's back. That's how we feel. We're excited about it.
Well, in the eighth inning last night, I think it was the eighth inning, Freddy Peralta went to a 3-0 count on one of the White Sox hitters, and the ball came within inches. I mean, inches of tying the game. I think a few choice words were dropped in our house here, beginning with an S. And, you know, it's great to be able to have that passion again. Understanding when the game's over, we'll go back to, you know, the challenges we, our family, friends, and others face. But, you know, I've been very, being involved with the sport, you know, proud, and otherwise it's just fun to see that these games are as competitive and good as they are. I mean, we did watch baseball to malign other games that were out there, but there's nothing like Major League Baseball, right? Yeah. Some of the games that were otherwise broadcast. And, you know, I was talking to a prominent columnist today, we'll go nameless, but real traditionalist who, you know, this isn't a traditional season. I said to him, well, how would it feel if there just was no baseball? Wouldn't that be worse? And, oh yeah, that would be worse. So, you know, we've been dealt the hand we've been dealt with the pandemic. And, you know, and by the way, I don't know what you all think. I think it shows pretty well on television. I'm surprised the fake crowd noise isn't so fake.
The crowd noise, the cardboard cutouts actually help because you lose them and they just become background. And they do kind of set it. I think the production has been really good at keeping tighter shots, just the field and keeping the seats out of it. I'm fine. Like, it's not even a distraction at all for me. I'm just lost in the sport. I hope the players feel the same way because they actually have to deal with the big difference. But the TV product, to me, I'm fine with it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think the players, when the game starts, for everybody, you know, it's game on. I think, and Trevor, I know you talked a lot of, you probably do, but you know, the most challenges come when you're traveling. And listen, it's no fun to go to sit on a plane with a mask and go to a hotel and sit in a room. And, you know, there's an article today, and it was in The Athletic or wherever, that talked about how the Yankees and the Cubs have a, so I think baseball may be going to, as a suggested protocol, have a room where you pick up food and all that. But, you know, that's not exactly what we're all used to. It is, unfortunately, really what, you know, that is the, I have not gone, at least for me, I haven't been to a restaurant than to pick up food, you know, since, you know, these are a lot of adjustments we all have to make in our everyday lives, even if you're not playing, you know, because the virus doesn't discriminate. And it's going to be with us for a while. So, you know, at a minimum this year, I think, which nobody wants to talk about, is a great road to, we're all committed to playing this year, finishing this year, playing next year. We're going to learn a lot this year that's going to allow us to play next year. And that's, I think, critical. And, you know, the players, what they're doing is, the fact that they can perform at this level is really extraordinary. It just shows, you know, I always, and obviously I'm competitive because involved with sports. And I think that, you know, I know, obviously there's extraordinary athletes in all sports. When you see what baseball players have to do with the refinement of skills they have to have, it's, you know, this center fielder for the White Sox, Luis Robert, is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
He threw a rope last night. Christian was going to cruise, and he made it by like, the, you know, and he can, you know, throw, run, hit, you know, he adjusts his swing with two strikes. I called Jerry Reinsdorf. I said, God, you've got some players over there. Jerry, all ball players and all owners, everybody around the sport is very superstitious, right? You want to talk about it too much. Let's see how the season goes. And, you know.
even owners get that way. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're all. Oh, yeah.
He's a really fun one to watch, though, Robert out there in Chicago. They have a bunch of young guys, and they struggled for a while to get those young guys, and now it's kind of cool to see them back in contention with the team they've done. They made some splashes, but – definitely, I mean, Luis Robert is like, he's the guy right now, the young guy. And he's one of those guys that comes up and you're like, he just looks the part already. He's not scared. He's not, you know, he's ready to go. He's just add water, you know? So he's definitely someone we talk about a lot on our show.
Just add water. That's a good line, Trev.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you.
I'll mention he's a keeper on the Mikey Attanasio fantasy team.
Oh.
It's called Outa Hira.
I like that.
Second baseman.
I was just about
Mike told in his head, Mike's in the room here. He's going like this.
Oh, no. I was just about to say, when you say just add water, there's a young guy on the Brewers. You just mentioned him, Hira, who we also saw him at the California Strong event. Big-time prospect. He came up, and he showed how special he can be. I don't know. Can you give us more on him? Because, like, he's a guy that, you know, luckily the baseball audience now knows that Yelich guy because he went out and won the MVP. But more people need to know about Keston Hira.
Yeah, Keston is another one like Luis that, you know, from the moment he came up, you know, acted like he belonged, acted like he should be there. And just a phenomenal hitter. When they were drafting him, in fact, I talked to some inside baseball for you guys who love baseball. I actually was briefed on it in the clubhouse at Citi Field. And the guys were a little concerned because they really were hoping to get him. And look, I don't know in 15 seasons that I've done anything other than say yes. but there was some nervousness because, you know, he's, you know, when you meet him in person, and Trevor, he looks like a ball player. He's got what our old GM, Doug Melvin, would call like a hitter's hands. He's got a really strong grip. But, you know, when you watch a video of him, he's smaller. But, you know, when you look at a lot of the athletes coming out, the guy, Garrett Mitchell, we drafted this year, is just a beast. And Trevor, I think you've hit with him. You know, Keston didn't profile that way. And they said, so I heard all these things, you know, you may have heard that his arm. They said, but he's the best hitter in college. I said, are you sure he's the best college hitter? Oh, yeah, he's flat out the best college hitter. I said, oh, we don't have anything to talk about then. I said, really? I said, that's an easy one.
You know, the draft is so hard in general to pick a guy and have him become, you know, a major league caliber player. It's tough. And then you're saying right there, it's like, you want to pick a guy that looks the part, you know, that kind of helps the process a little bit. But that's what's so cool about baseball is, you know, all shapes, colors, sizes can be successful. And then you heard, hey, he's got the hit tool. He's the best hitter in college. Who cares what he looks like, what he profiles, whatever. Like, this guy can hit. I love that. That's the best part about baseball to me, is how accessible it is. You don't have to be boring to play baseball like you do some other sports like football and basketball. I mean, you kind of have to be a physical specimen to be in those sports. But baseball, it's a skilled sport. And Keston and a lot of other guys, you know, obviously Altuve, have proved that for decades.
Right. And around that, though, you know, like Christian Yelich has bragged to me that he can dunk a basketball behind his head easily, just stand under the basket. Haven't tested him on it because we don't need any injuries. You know, guys can throw a ball, you know, 350 feet on a line. There's things they can do that are quite, you know, dramatic physically. But for those who otherwise just have refined skills.
I want to lead into the next question because we're talking about baseball and skills and all this. And one of the things we wanted to ask you, it's kind of a funnier one, but of all the owners, if we put you guys together and put two teams, say AL versus NL, where is Mark Adonisio playing on the field? Where are you hitting in the lineup? Give us your profile, your baseball profile.
Scouting report.
We need it.
All right. Well, I'm mindful. You know, it's funny how almost everybody remembers their past athletic achievements in greater magnitude than was reality.
Me too.
You're talking to the right crew.
I was talking to one of my colleagues at my investment firm today who said, well, guess where my daughter plays on our softball team? And I know he's ready to brag. So go shortstop, because the shortstop's usually the best player, right? By the way, Ryan Braun says he can still play shortstop for us. By the way,
he could never play shortstop.
And Ryan, we hope you're watching this.
Yeah.
We may, you know, we may, before the season's over, you know, if it proves to be his last year, we may have to put him out there and see what he's got.
I like that.
Yeah.
That'll be Craig's call. By the way, Craig Counsell still looks like he could play shortstop.
Yes, he does.
Anyway, I noticed in high school, you know, I went from shortstop to second base to center field because I had a pretty good arm, to right field. And, you know, the progression wasn't great. And, you know, what I would do on is hit lazy fly balls on curveballs. And that was a problem. And not great. Now, I have to think about who can, you know, we got a bunch of owners who played college baseball. We'd have to look at that
and get Jeter out of there. It's not fair. He doesn't. Oh,
well, that's right. I think Jared could beat any nine guys by himself. Right.
He got me beat. My progression was shortstop to second base to right field to cut from the team. And the lazy fly balls on curveballs were just swing and misses.
Yeah. So
you got me beat there. I wanted to go even further back, talk about playing baseball in high school. Was baseball always your number one? In the Northeast, baseball kind of dominates fanhood-wise, You grew up in the Northeast. Was a sports fanatic across the board? Has baseball always been the number one sport for you?
Oh, yeah, by a lot. And, you know, by the way, Joe Pepitone, just to show where – he used to live in the neighborhood. And okay. And on my way to PS-108, I'd pass by, you know, his place. And on off day, sometimes you'd see him playing with kids in the street. And I never was able to time it right to get in one of those games. Seems like the game was already set when I'd be walking by. You know, in those days, yeah, baseball, I think, was the number one sport among kids. And nothing else with the trading cards and all that. And, you know, that's evolved. We're trying to get to a younger demographic as everyone is. By the way, one of the good things in this, the early data, baseball doesn't want to go through it, talk about it now because it's not enough data points, but our demographic for these games now is trending much younger. than it had been, which is very positive. And we'll see if it, you know, if it continues.
Well, you got a lot of young talent in the league, and yes, the media and the marketing has picked up. And I think, well, I'll pat ourselves on the back. I think, you know, you got a lot of podcasts and you got new media.
We're
really
trying our best.
Helping, as well as the card industry is booming again. Yep. That's really taking off. Is there anything else that's going on in baseball right now that you love, that you're seeing, that you want to baseball to keep doing and keep projecting that way?
Well, you know, I think in a you know, out of victim of circumstance, some of the rules changes we put in this year are things we've talked about for a while, starting the runner on second base in the 10th inning or in the extra innings, having 7-inning game, now start runner on second base in the 8th inning of a doubleheader. I'm somewhat of a purist and wasn't sure about it. Although, you know, some of these, we had a game in Washington last year where it went, and Yelly hit a home run in like the 9th inning and then the 12th. It went forever. It went to like 2 or 3 in the morning. Guys had to be back in the clubhouse the next day at 8. That's not great. But I found the strategy, you know, what you will think of guys starting at second base is kind of fun now. Are they going to bunt? What are they going to do? The pressure on the pitcher is different now, for sure.
I like it. I've come around on it, but my only request, and I'm sure you'll voice this when you guys make the grand decision, you say, John Boy wants this. Just give me 2 innings of the 10th and the 11th of no runner on second, because I think the numbers say 80% of extra inning games end before the 13th starts anyway, but then you could throw the runner on second. Because I agree, those 16-inning games when you have pitchers pitching and everyone's just tired and wants to get out of there.
You don't need it.
No one needs those anymore. But I'd like 2 innings of clean extra innings before we go to the runner on second. So that's my official vote.
What do you think? What do you think, Trevor?
I agree with it. Obviously we talk about baseball every day, all day. So Jimmy's actually turned me on this a little bit. Originally I thought, no, I don't want any runner on second base. But when you look at the statistics and he's saying, yeah, 80% of the games end before the 12th when you go to extra innings. And then when you do implement that rule with the runner on second, those games end. Like statistically, they end quickly. So I've come around and I agree with Jim now. I think guys will be on board with that. 2 innings of regular baseball, you get the 10th and the 11th, because you're still going to have relievers fresh for the most part. And then, yeah, once that happens, let's not have the position players pitching. Let's go to the 12th, put the guy in second base. I think that is, you could start there and then see where it goes. We've talked a lot on our show about how other sports, when games in crunch time, basketball, best player has the ball in his hands, football, the 2-minute drill, the quarterback has the ball in his hands. It'd be cool to do something where you could pick where you started in the lineup. I think fans might enjoy that. I know that's really far out there, but I like the 2 innings of regular baseball, and then we'll figure out what happens after that.
I had not heard the idea of starting the lineup. Listen, we just have to do things to make it more entertaining. We have to do things to make the pace of the game greater. And, you know, I focus more on pace than time. Although, you know, I wish we could just have 2.5-hour games. I think it would help a lot. And it's hard to keep attention on anything anymore for that long. And what do you think about the 7-inning doubleheader?
The players seem to love it. So, like, we just had a bunch of them. The Yankees had one. Every player stepped out and said they love it. And something I said on the show was, as a fan, I haven't been conditioned for that. I spent my whole life conditioned for 9 innings. So it's my first time ever doing it. These players do this in the minor leagues. They've done 7 innings before. They've done 7 innings in college baseball. So for them, they like it. Now, what one of the Yankees players said was, make every Sunday a 7-inning doubleheader, and then have Monday off. And that's what seemed the players would be like. They would love that. You'll get me to love anything eventually. I wasn't conditioned for 7 innings. Like, you know, in the 5th inning when I was like, oh my God, only 2 left and we're down by a couple runs, I was panicking. But, you know, the players seem to like it. And I think if the players like it, it's probably better for the product moving forward.
For me, it's a lot coming together at the same time, because with the so much emphasis on bullpens nowadays, you're seeing a lot of teams just, oh, 7 innings, you know, we can go four guys. They'll never see the same hitter twice.
Counts would have a lot of fun with
I think it's interesting. Right. Oh, yeah. I could Craig would have a blast with that. I mean, hey, you get to Hader in the fifth inning, basically. So it's interesting. I mean, part of the traditionalist in me would have loved to see that start in, like, the 80s. So you just be like, hey, starting pitchers, go get it for seven innings and let's do it. The strategy's fun, and I think it is a really good fit for this year and necessary. And, hey, if the players like it, kind of like Jim said, I mean, you get used to it.
I actually am all, you know, obviously it's cooperative, but all for things like that. First of all, you can see at the end, you go into any clubhouse in September, and you live this, Trevor. You see how beat up and banged up guys are by the end of the year. It is a grind. So if you can have, and also mental breaks now on Mondays off. Mondays typically aren't big ticket days for us. And if you knew you had, you know, let's say 2 7 inning games and 14 innings of baseball on a Sunday, at least in Wisconsin, we probably usually sell it anyway. But that people in Wisconsin, by the way, it could be, you know, a 10-1 game, and we're losing 10-1, and you know they're there for the enjoyment, so which is great. Sorry about the phone there.
No, you're good.
You guys have great fans in Milwaukee.
That is, by the way, hard line.
yeah.
So I think other things, you know, we could do to engage the players. You know, I'd rather it's much better to do things. And by the way, you players know, I keep thinking, Trevor, you guys, players know better than we're going to know. Right. So great. You want to do this? We should be all open to that. And the more we can have guys as well exhibit their individuality, you know, I'm all for that. The sport is so steeped in this. One of the great things about your broadcast here in John Boy, right? You're getting outside, you know, the people can show their personality. You know, I can come on in my Brewers sweatshirt and talk about the Bronx. You can see the personalities of players better, and we have to do that. And I think, by the way, if we start working with players and things like that, sometimes, which is true in any, you know, negotiation, like I'll just tell you, like my money manager firm, almost if you say you want something, I'll say, nah, I don't think so. Right. So you get into this back and forth. And so, you know, I think some of the other rule changes that might make sense, you know, do you always have to step out of the box after in between every pitch? I mean, I know it's just a pitcher's rhythm, but there's ways we could streamline a lot of things if we said, hey, we'll do this and let's make these other. It's what they do in Washington, right? You tag a bunch of things you want to do on a bill that people want. And so I'd be all for the seven inning, two doubleheaders on Sunday, 2 7 inning games. And by the way, that'll let us see. And you know, the NFL, I talk about this, they are quicker, not being just saying the speed of which they're quicker with rule changes. The rules don't work. They go back. We have so many steeped in our tradition, mm-hmm. you know, traditionalists. In fact, I had a lot of questions when I first bought the team because I was curiosity in Wisconsin. It was like, well, are you a traditionalist or are you a whatever, you know, probably a troublemaker, like, no traditionalist, but we've got to be open to doing things differently. And still what's going on is guys throwing it's speed. The speed of the game is extraordinary, right? In terms of the actual, how fast pitchers are thrown and how hard balls are hit. That's way different than it was in the 1960s.
For yes. Sure. Yeah. I mean, the numbers on how many guys hit triple digits now compared to 10 years ago are crazy. You mentioned that, you know, the fans in Wisconsin will come out whenever and always. That is something that you guys have put a lot of thought into. Like, your fan experience in Milwaukee is really fun. I mean, the slide, the sausages, the tailgates, everything. Is that something that was there before you took over? When you took over, did you want to really build that up? And has that been a priority from the start? Because even Trevor said, like, and we were talking about, it's just like, you guys do a lot to make it a really enjoyable event for the fans.
Yeah, it was a priority from the start for a number of reasons. You know, starting with me, I felt like I was somewhat of an outsider growing up in the Bronx, working in Los Angeles, coming to Wisconsin. So I wanted to embrace their traditions. So one of the traditions was tailgating. Most teams don't allow tailgating because either there's a public drinking law or there's an economic reason. If you're drinking beer outside, you don't drink beer in the ballpark. I wanted to embrace the traditions. And, you know, we had a brand when I bought the team, first year was 05. Ballpark was 01. So this brand new facility, and I felt we should like cherish that. I was in a mixer probably at that point. You know, you did a series of indications of interest. There were probably half a dozen bidders at that time. And I walked in the right field corner in Miller Park and looked up and just could not believe that I could, own that.
Yeah.
And that moment, walked in the right field corner. I said, I've got to do everything I can, you know, to do this, everything. And God bless, it worked out. I've always cherished the ballpark, and we put a lot of resources. We've, you know, in what's otherwise a new ballpark, I think the team's invested over $100 million in the ballpark these years. We get money from the stadium district, which it's been a really a model of a public-private partnership, which had a 5 or 6 county sales tax that got sunsetted. So that was successful. Sales tax got sunsetted. And a stadium, if you come out, is it's still, we believe, state of the art. It's as good as it gets. And the Wisconsin traditions, whether it's, you didn't mention the polka dance that we do at the seventh inning, roll out the barrel polka on top of the dugout.
Yes.
There you go.
Big cities, you might feel it's a little corny. I think it's fun and charming, and everybody's, had a few beers by then, and it's a good time.
Yeah, that I'm thinking you give some people some time to pregame out there, tailgate. I make the most purchases on my Amazon app when I've had a few drinks. So let them lube it up outside, then they can come inside. And I think at least every time that we visited, and the Twins versus the Brewers is always a big weekend series. I just loved coming to your stadium to play. The fans are always very engaged. There's always a mix of Twins versus Brewers. And no matter what or where we were in the standings, it was always such a fun atmosphere. And I got to eat brats because you guys probably on purpose serve brats in the visiting clubhouse to slow us all down. And it worked.
We also have these fried cheese curds.
Ooh, oh, I love fried cheese curds. God. Don't get me started.
But we do that. Now the Yankees, do it differently. When you go there, they've got this really, it looks like a major corporate dining room. They've got guys carving, all kinds of fine beef and,
It's, yeah. I was like a rat, and the cheese was in the trap and I ate it every time. Yeah. In New York, same way. I'd have this huge thing of pasta, pastrami sandwich. And then go into the game. I'm probably not at my peak physical, wellness there, but there you go. Now that's, I get it.
They say that the finest dining in New York City is the away clubhouse in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
It's nice, but let's not go that far.
The finest dining.
Oh, it's really good.
I've got a weird one. We had a few things prepped for you. This one, something you just said before. I think it's funny. Everyone has that moment. You get a new apartment or you move into a new home, and maybe you got your man cave, and I've got an old Bernie Williams picture that I'm gonna hang up or something like that. You just mentioned you're in the Brewer Stadium and you look at it and you're like, hey, this is me now. Did you have something you had to bring in? Did you have your recliner that you had to bring in there? Was there something that you brought in to make your house a home?
Well, first thing I did when I bought the team, and I don't remember in which order, I called Robin Yount and Bob Uecker. Robin, I still give him shit about. He didn't realize how committed to winning I was, so he was telling me all about NASCAR racing, and he'd like to help out, but, this NASCAR is great. I'm like, really? And Uke's like, I don't know, a guy from Los Angeles. I had to win them over. But so the first thing I did is I took the 20 seats by the dugout. Because okay, so you own the teams. I want to sit right next to the team's dugout, right? That's an easy one. I found there's a guy, his name is Bob Nobler, and we call him Baseball Bob. And Baseball Bob had not missed an inning, not missed a pitch, 1980. I think opening of the stadium. So he wouldn't even drink. You know, if you give him a bottle of water, he's sipping because he's not going to miss a pitch. And
God.
You know, legend has it that when he was married after 7 years of this, it was a beautiful Wisconsin day after a tough winter on a Sunday. And his wife at the time said, let's go have a picnic. He said, no, I got to go. There's a game. He said, well, it's a beautiful day. And we've been inside. He said, you know the deal. Baseball comes first. So that was it for that marriage, pretty much.
She thought it was just a joke.
Okay, he stays. So we got 19 seats and Bob.
That's wow. Amazing. That's awesome. The slide. I wanted to know, have you ever gone down the slide?
Oh, yeah. So if you guys ever come out to Miller Park, you got to sign a waiver. And it's pretty fast. It can it's pretty fast.
I've heard it's scary when you're up top because you see how high you are.
Yeah, and when you're going up the stairs, there's, you know, there are high steps, and when you look in between the steps, you don't want to fall through those steps. It's a fun experience. You guys can you don't need notice to sign a waiver for us to do the slide. Want to be in the sausage race? We put you in the sausage race, but we need a little notice on that because a big waiting list on that. You guys have a little betting pool on that, by the way.
Does that ever get predetermined? There's a lot of rumors about that. Do you guys let the race go? Is there any funny business?
I think there's a little gaming of it. So like when Mike did it and he won, he was playing high school basketball then. He had some speed then. He figured out which was the lightest costume. The funny part of it is he wouldn't eat before it. He did win, but he got like dehydrated.
Sweating in the sausage. So
there's something to the weight of the costume. Okay. There's something to where you stand. And like I had a guy who's running track at Amherst who did, he won pretty handily. So I haven't heard it that the fix is in ever, but you know, if you three want to run, any of you want to lobby me and try to get some information or pull
position, okay.
Yeah, I got to do all the research I can there.
That's fair.
How about this one? New York slice or a Wisconsin brat?
Oh, boy.
That's you know, we actually, there's a pizza place out here called Mulberry Street Pizza that was lunch yesterday. And I really have tried to shift allegiances like from the Jets to the Packers and I've done a good job of that, Knicks to the Bucks, but,
both those teams made it easy for you.
Yeah. That's true.
As it turns out. But I would say New York slice is going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you, too.
It's the right answer.
Do you have a place? We're here. We'll go get it. We'll test it out tomorrow. If you're back in the city, is there like a – what's your go-to slice?
It used to be Ray's Pizza on 76th and 3rd. There was one on 6th and 12th. There's one on 76th and 3rd. And then everybody – I guess if you're named Ray – you know, with trademark, you can have a place called Ray's. And so it's hard to, and I think that Ray Barry Group sold. So that used to be, and I tend to prefer that to the super thin crust. Some people like the thin crust. I like a little.
There are about 1,000 Ray's in New York City. Cause I would go to one as well. I think it is. And it was in right near Times Square, 77th and something. We might have been to the same one, but I would go there every single time we got to New York, straight there, get a slice. There's nothing better than that. It's like the whole ambiance, the feeling you're in New York.
Yeah, you're on the line. You get the, now it's, you got a socially distant line. You kind of brought this.
There we go.
There you go. Mask on. Yeah. We had one question, Trev. I'll ask for you.
Okay.
Trev wants to know.
Good looking guy.
How come you never traded for him?
He's in Minnesota.
I'm going to say, Mikey used to be pushing for you, by the way.
Wow.
I remember he told me that power was overrated at one point, and that's when I wasn't going to be a Brewer because that was really my only attribute.
Well, there was no such thing as the right-handed power hitter Doug Melvin didn't like, but you know, Miller Park, the ball, we do look for, I think Mike likes to, you know, jab a little bit, maybe. You know, we look for power hitters in Miller Park because ball travels well. And
another trade that you did make is the CC Sabathia trade, and he comes over and gets the ball every 3 days, hits some home runs. Can you tell me just, I mean, that is like one of the cooler stories in recent baseball history. Free agent that came over to the Brewers and put it on the line, even for like, you know, that month stretch or whatever. Do you have any fond memories of CeCe and that was it 08 stretch?
Let's give the numbers first. It was 17 starts. He went 11-2 with a 1.65. He completed 7 games and threw 3 shutouts.
I think he was taking the ball every 3 days too.
Awesome.
You know, he was at the end, and I feel that you know, to this day, I'm so respectful of what he did. I actually went to his retirement dinner in New York in September. That was the turning point for our organization, was bringing him in, because, you know, when I bought the team, we had literally had 11 or 12 seasons of losing in a row, had not been to the playoffs in, I think, 26 years or something, back to like the 80s and early 80s. And it was so negative that the very first year we were at 500, because we traded for Carlos Lee, pushed the payroll from 22 million to 40 million. Whoa. So we're 500, and, you know, and then everybody's like, well, you still haven't won. You haven't lost for 12 years, but you still haven't won. And we kept getting put in the record of futility with other teams. And then we started, you know, we took a step back in 06 and 07. We actually finally got to 82-80-1, but we couldn't get that 26-year, you know, 1982 monkey off the back. And our players, you know, Ben Sheets and all the guys, got so tired of seeing the 82 Brewers and the, you know, so even things like the, you know, the great ball and glove logo we went back to, the guys wanted their own identity, their own logo. We really couldn't get it till we brought, you know, CeCe in. And you know, I give Doug Melvin credit for that, because what he did is he said, look, he's going to be a free agent. And by the way, they got Michael Brantley, so they did okay in that trade.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, if we trade early, we won't not only won't get in the competition, but we might be able to have him for enough during the season that we can make a difference. And I believe the trade was done late June. And, you know, it was a brilliant idea, and it was executed. And CeCe came in and he just put the team on his back. He started pitching every third day. And, you know, his agent, thought we were maybe taking advantage, and, you know, we'd call in Doug, and we're like, hey, talk to CeCe. You guys all know he's a big guy.
Yes.
I'm a picture. I remember he put his hand in, like, you know, you tell him he's not pitching every 3 days, because we're not telling him that. And he just, you know, put the whole team on his back. And that was the transformational point in our organization. And I think all the success we've had since, it all started with him. So I'll never forget it. And one of the reasons I went to his retirement, besides being very fond of him and his family, and went to his retirement dinner, and, you know, was hoping to get him back this year in our 50th. This is our 50th season. This won't be the year to do it, obviously. But, you know, and people in Wisconsin just love him. Yes. For a guy who was there for 3 months, it was like he was there his whole career, for how people feel about him.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, we were, as Yankee fans, we were lucky enough to get CeCe. And I mean, an incredible personality. You mentioned his family at the end. I mean, they got entrenched. I mean, Amber and the kids, Amber, like they became part of the Yankees culture. Just the perfect family. And everything, when you're a fan watching the game, it's everything you want. He's an intense competitor. He'll do anything to win. and he's left so many fond memories for us. I have my last question for you. I think the other guys might have one or two more. You mentioned you talked to, you know, some of the other owners. You mentioned you talked to Reinsdorf. Do you ever text them just like LOL Yelich or like remember the Yelich trade or anything like that? Like we have him.
What's the version of an owner flexing on another owner? Yeah. Does that exist?
Yeah. Okay. Well, before I do, I just want to mention CC is also taking a leadership role with the Players Alliance.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, you know, social justice issues, he, Curtis Granderson, Edwin Jackson, but CC, you know, that's really important initiative for baseball and so typical of CC to jump in and take a leadership role in something like that. He can be impactful on, but now having said that, I think we're really intensely competitive with each other, but we don't really, certainly not on trades. There's no, I think we have this superstition. So if you call somebody, like I called Reinsdorf, tell him the other morning, executive council call. And I called him after because I knew he just hung up. And I said, hey, you know, you got some team this year. And by the way, relative to having a season this year, none of us would have gotten to see that. He had some athletes over there. And he's like, no, he don't want to talk about it because then it's going to die.
I'd say you don't want to jinx it. If you are on the good side of a trade, you don't want to make fun because the next one, you don't want to be on the other side. So you just
frankly, you want your trades to work out for both sides because you just do
good business,
right. And I mean, I'm sure history will be rewritten. I don't. If I go back through the memos, I don't believe I read any memos, hey, Christian Yelich is going to be the MVP.
I don't think Stern said that.
But we did know, you know, his character, his determination, and he had, you know, he was just like, you know, whatever, the perfect ball player in terms of. And you saw, I saw one of the graphics the other night. Besides, you know, being two-time batting champion and home run champion, I think he was second in the National League in steals, you know, combined over 2 years. This guy does everything. You see his inside the park home run last night. He was, you know, trotting around first base.
Nice.
And then he just kicks it into this and he's not even breathing heavily. Some guys, they finished him. He's
that will not be us in the sausage race.
Yeah, that's.
So we'll see. I don't know. Guys, you got, listen, here you go. What you got to do is just listen to what Trevor's saying here, right? Feed him some brats before the race. You guys, take a page from Mike. You know, maybe just a little sip of water. Figure out which costume is the better one.
You got to feel good about your costume.
Yeah.
You can't feel bad in the costume.
That's and there is one, key to it, but it depends whoever comes up with the best incentive here. If there is one key on that race.
All right. Well, that'll be the next time we reach out. We'll figure out who gets the best incentive to figure out who wins the race.
Jake looks like a sausage already. Don't even.
Yeah, I don't need a costume.
Yeah.
Just let him keep thinking that. That's just.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think I might bring a bratwurst in the costume with me. I think that might be the secret. I think the power of the brat.
Yes. Just don't choke. That'll be bad. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
We
appreciate it. We're very happy baseball is going on, and hopefully we run into you and see you.
Anything else we need to pass along for you? Any other initiatives or anything that we can pass along to the fans?
No, this is appreciate you guys told me it would be fun, and I've seen a couple of the broadcasts, so I believe that. And now we'll hopefully have a chance to talk again. And I came with no agenda. I just wanted to. I mean, what's better than talking baseball, right?
That's it.
That's what we're
saying. Life. All right. Well, thank you again.
Okay, thanks.
And there you have it. So huge shout out to Mark for joining us and coming on the show. Now we'll just get every other owner to come on the show.
29
and
to
we'll
go.
Be golden. So I highly doubt it. I highly doubt we'll have other owners cool enough to sit down with us and chat and just talk baseball.
Maybe.
So we'll see. But that was really cool. So thank him very much for coming on. Thank you guys for tuning in and listening. We'll be back tomorrow with the recap. You guys have anything, final thoughts?
Trev?
We confirmed what I've always kind of believed, that the Brewers do put the brats in the visiting clubhouse to slow their opponent down. We confirmed that rumor. It's fact. Watch out for those brats when you go visit Milwaukee, okay, guys?
No, it's funny. My mother executed a very similar game plan for about 21 years.
Slow Jake down with some brats.
Just heavy pasta dishes.
Jake went home recently, and his mom served him a light meatball lunch.
Yeah. Fell asleep for 2 hours. So.
All right, thank you guys very much. We'll see you tomorrow with the series recap episode. Goodbye, good luck, farewell, love ya, peace.